They reached the river at a point where the timber was thick, heavily choked with underbrush. He considered swimming across, but the river looked wide and deep. The pursuers might catch up while the horses were swimming. Cordell and Buster would be easy targets. Chances were, he thought, that the posse would expect him to keep going west, upriver, the direction he had been running. He cut back to the east, into the heaviest underbrush he could find. Cordell helped Buster down from the saddle, then held his hands over the two horses' noses to keep them from nickering at the horses of the posse.
Why not? Don't even breathe, heavy.
He could see little through the brush, but he heard the riders crashing through the thick undergrowth. They seemed to be coming toward Cordell and Buster. Then they turned away. Cordell had had no chance to conceal the trail. He hoped there was not a good tracker in the bunch.
Sound like they're going off from us, but we better stay put for a while. How you making out?
Buster was not making out well at all. Luther Cordell looked at his ashen-faced and trembling partner.
Oh, God. I didn't know it hurt like this.
Cordell knew that sometimes a bullet could do a lot of damage even without striking a vital spot. Shock alone could kill. He had nearly $10,000 hidden away, and right now there was not a thing it could do to help this boy. Andy was angry with himself. Many people assumed that because of the years he'd lived among the Comanches, he should be a good tracker. The men who rode with him had tacitly delegated the tracking to him. The truth was, he had no particular skill at it. He had known Indians who could track an eagle's flight across the water, but that knack eluded Andy. Farley Brackett once told him he couldn't track an elephant through a cornfield. Andy could no longer find the trail of the fugitives. He saw where one split off. A couple of posse men followed those tracks. Andy and three others tried to follow the two men who remained together. Andy lost the trail when it led into timber along the river.
Too much vegetation! And hogs have rooted through here. They've torn up the ground.
Joe Yates was a blacksmith by trade, not a lawman. He had hurriedly saddled a horse he had just shod and hadn't even taken time to hunt for his hat. Sweat rolled down from the top of his balding head.
Maybe somebody living around here some.
Andy had a nagging feeling the fugitives were close by, but these thickets could hide the elephant Farley talked about.
Shanny York's cabin is a little ways up yonder. You might be able to tell us something.
That darky's getting so old, he probably can't tell a horse from a cow at 30 yards.
There's a lot of life in him yet.
Shandy came out of the cabin, pressing one hand against the small of his back to lessen the pain of his rheumatism. He listened to Andy's description of the men, then shook his head.
I done all my doing in the cool of the morning. Been laid up since dinner with this misery along my ribs. I ain't seen nobody.
Andy was disappointed, but not surprised. It stood to reason that Cordell would avoid dwellings where somebody might see him.
If they come around, tell them what they want to hear and give them whatever they want. They're too dangerous for you to mess with.
I'll be meek as a lamb. I already inherited my piece of the earth. I aim to keep living on it as long as the Lord lets me.
How would he know about the meek inheriting the earth? That's out of the Bible. He can't read.
I doubt there's a page in the book that somebody like old Preacher Webb ain't read to him. He don't forget much.
Biscuits Vanderpool operated the restaurant where Andy had almost had breakfast. He'd been squirming for a while, a sign that the saddle was chapping his rump.
Andy, my horse is about to give out, and I gotta get back and start fixing supper for my customers.
Andy looked toward the lowering sun and shrugged.
I reckon we've all run our horses farther than we ought to. I'll make a fresh start in the morning and see if I can cut their trail someplace.
You're not a ranger anymore. You got no authority to arrest anybody.
A six-shooter has authority of its own, and any citizen can make an arrest.
Think you have a chance of catching them?
Not much. They'll likely be halfway across the next county before daylight.
That's what the telegraph is for. I expect by now the word has gone out to every lawman within 100 miles.
The telegraph had become a valuable asset to law enforcement. Andy had read about a new gadget supposed to allow people actually to talk to someone miles away instead of sending out written messages by code. He'd have to see one to believe it, though. There had to be a limit to how many more new things inventors could think up. There wasn't room for them, and most people couldn't afford them anyway. Even in the heat of the chase, there had seldom been a minute that he'd not thought about Tom Blessing. Now, returning to town empty-handed, he could think of little else.
I feel like I've let Tom down.
It wasn't any more your responsibility than it was ours. Ain't none of us really lawmen.
Tom tried to hire me as a deputy. Maybe if I'd agreed, things would have turned out different.
Well, a man can drive himself crazy thinking about what might have been. You gotta live with what was and what is.
Cordell moved nearer to the edge of the thicket so he could observe the open ground beyond. He saw horsemen a couple of times, probably part of the posse that chased him. Not until dusk did he help Buster onto his horse and venture out of the brush. Even then, he held close to it in case they had to make a hasty retreat. After riding a mile or so, he saw a cabin. At first, he thought it might be Gaskin's, but he realized that the old man's place was farther from the river.
No telling who lived there, but I got no choice.
Buster stood a strong chance of dying on him if they kept riding. Cordell drew back into the timber 50 yards off as he saw four horsemen leave the cabin. He watched tensely, hoping they'd not seen him. The men kept riding in the general direction of town.
Now that was too damn close.
He saw a positive side, however. What better place to seek refuge than where the posse had just been?
Hang on, Buster. Maybe we can pass the night here at least, huh?
It was a simple one-room log cabin with a smokehouse, chicken house, a couple of log corrals, and a long shed off to one side. A garden showed evidence of hard work, its rows neatly hoed. Plants of several kinds were showing themselves, though none were yet mature enough to yield. Cordell respected good farmers, though boyhood on a hardscrabble Louisiana cotton farm left him looking for a life without all that sweat and heavy lifting. He had thought there must be an easier way to make a living. There might be, but this wasn't it. That old cotton farm looked a lot better in hindsight. Smoke rose from the rock chimney, a sign somebody was fixing supper. The thought made his stomach rumble. A dog came out, wagging its tail and barking a greeting. Cordell drew a pistol he'd grabbed as he left the jail. It was not his own, but with the other offenses he'd committed, theft of a firearm seemed no more than a misdemeanor.
Hello, the house!
The door opened inward. An old black man peered out.
You all a little late! The rest of the posse done been and gone!
Cordell grimaced in disappointment. He had assumed, from the well-kept appearance of the place, that its owner was white.
This your farm?
Yes, sir. It ain't a whole lot, but it's mine.
Cordell briefly considered moving on, but Buster badly needed to stop.
Uh-huh. You got a name?
Yes, sir. It's Shanty. Shanty York.
Well, me and the boy here, we need shelter for the night and something to eat.
He thought he saw realization come into the old man's eyes. The posse had probably described the fugitives enough that he recognized the pair.
There's just the two of you?
Just us. You got anybody else in there with you?
Ain't nobody here but me.
Despite obvious misgivings, the old man opened the door wider.
You all come on in. I'll put your horses in the pen yonder.
I'll take care of them myself.
It had struck Cordell that Shanty might get on one of the horses and run after the posse. Cordell was strong, known to bend horseshoes. He eased Buster down from the saddle by himself.
Here, this boy hurt. Help me get him inside.
Shanty looked too frail to be of much help, but he lent what support he could.
All I got is that old cot yonder.
That'll have to do. Find me some clean cloth in place of this dirty neckerchief. You got any whiskey?
No, sir. I don't hold with it.
I thought all darkies love whiskey.
Not this one. A man never knows when his time might come. I don't want St. Peter to smell whiskey on my breath.
I wasn't thinking about drinking it. I need to wash Buster's wound and see if I can dig the bullet out.
I got something the doctor gave me a while back when I cut myself with the carving knife.
Shanty fetched a dark bottle from an open cupboard shelf. Cordell pulled Buster's shirt down and removed the bloodied neckerchief with which he'd wrapped the wound. The bullet hole was red and inflamed around the edges. He opened the bottle. The disinfectant set fire to Buster's wound. Cordell had to hold him down.
Ooh, looks bad.
Yeah. He needs a doctor.
There's Dr. Smith in town. I could go fetch him.
Yeah, and fetch the law while you at it, huh? You know who we are, don't you?
I figure you the ones Andy and them are looking for. They say you all shot Sheriff Blessing. I wished you hadn't. He's a fine man.
Shandy had a small fire going. Cordell opened the blade of his pocket knife and held it over the flames until the burning was too much for him to stand. He smelled the hair singe on the back of his hand.
You hold him down the best you can. Buster, now you grit your teeth. This ain't gonna be no Saturday night dance.
Cordell probed for the bullet. The boy lunged forward, almost breaking free of Shanty's weak grip. Sweat broke out on Cordell's forehead and ran down to sting his eyes. Blood welled up and spilled from the wound.
You ain't no doctor. You fixing to kill him.
Damn.
Cordell withdrew the blade. His hands were trembling. He realized he was doing more harm than good. He wiped a sleeve across his forehead and felt his throat tighten.
You're right. This ain't no good.
In helpless frustration, he threw the open knife across the room and clenched his fists. Shanty staunched the blood flow with a folded cloth.
Oh, that bullet'll kill him if it stays in there. You'd ought to take him to Dr. Smith.
I can't do that, old man. Don't you see they're liable to hang him? Oh, what I yelling at you for? None of this your fault. It's Milt's fault. Hell, it's mine for getting caught in jail like a Saturday night drunk. I can't blame Buster. Kid too green to know what he was letting himself in for.
Well, maybe they wouldn't hang him. Not if he wasn't the one done the shooting.
Cordell rubbed a huge bloody hand across his whiskered face.
God, if I could just turn back to time, I would have made him go home even if I'd had to take a whip to him.
Boys his age can be mighty willful. Might be he'd have just gone off with somebody else and done the same thing.
But he didn't. He went with me.
Carefully, Shandy wrapped Buster's wound.
We didn't mean for nobody to get hurt. That fool that did the shooting ain't even with us no more. Did you say that the sheriff is dead?
No, sir. All they knowed was that he was hurt plenty bad. He might have gone to glory by now, though.
Well, that sure would be some tough damn luck for me.
Without consciously willing it, Cordell reached up and touched his throat. He imagined the feel of a rope around it.
Are you a praying man there, Shanny?
I thank the Lord every morning that I can wake up and get out of bed.
Him and me, we ain't that well acquainted. I hope you'll pray for that sheriff. And for this boy, too.
Done it. But I'll do it some more.
They left Buster lying on the cot. Shanty fried up some pork. Buster couldn't eat, so Cordell finished it. The old man's wrinkled black hands shook with nervousness.
Now, we don't mean you no harm. We be gone come daylight.
You going on, then? With the boy in this shape?
Nothing else we can do.
Cordell figured Shandy was likely to take advantage of any opportunity to get out of the cabin and run. He spread a blanket on the floor against the door so Shandy couldn't slip out. He dozed off and on, but didn't let himself fall into deep sleep. In dawn's pale light, Buster's wound looked worse.
Hey, think you'll be able to ride today?
Buster nodded. His voice was so weak that though Cordell saw Buster's lips move, he couldn't hear words.
We got to move, huh? Somebody liable to show up?
He don't look like he got much breath left in him. He ought to stay here.
It crossed Cordell's mind that the old man might be thinking of a potential reward. But he reconsidered, for Shandy seemed genuinely concerned. Cordell stepped through the door and looked into the sunrise. He saw no one.
Oh, I believe you mean well, but there's too many people looking for us that don't have good intentions. Sooner we had some breakfast, me and Buster, we'd be on our way.
After Cordell saddled the horses and led them to the cabin, he tried to help Buster to his feet.
Come on, Buster.
The youth couldn't stand alone. He slumped back onto the cot.
He'd die if you make him ride.
Them people from town liable to kill him if he don't.
I don't think so. They good folks, most of them. Leave him here with me. Soon as you got away, I'll go and fetch the doctor.
Cordell was slow in making up his mind. Either choice tore at his conscience. To keep riding might kill Buster. On the other hand, angry posses had been known to exact summary justice at the end of a rope. Cordell had had a couple of close calls of that sort himself. Buster was too young to have his life snatched away from him in such a sudden and brutal manner. He hadn't had time to sample many of the world's pleasures. As far as Cordell knew, the boy hadn't even known the wonder of being with a warm and willing girl.
Damn, I don't know what to do. Hell, this kid no worse than me when I was his age. I can't leave him to wind up with a noose around his neck, but if I take him with me, I might as well hang the collar on him myself.
After the first time Cordell reluctantly allowed Buster to go along on a foray, it had been increasingly easy to keep saying yes. Staring down into the fevered face, he made his decision.
Whew. I leave him with you for now. But don't send for the doctor yet, huh? I'll be back.
If the posse come again, they'll see his horse. Everybody knows I ain't got one.
I'll lead him down to the river, stake him on grass when nobody have to spot him.
Cordell stepped out of the cabin. Mounted, Cordell took the second horse's reins.
You a good and decent man. I wish I had some money to give you, but I don't right now.
You don't owe me nothing. I just don't want to think about that boy dying out on the trail. It ain't a fit way to meet his maker.
Cordell turned in the saddle.
Oh, one last thing. You know an old man named Gaskin?
Yes, sir. I'm afraid I know the gentleman.
Which way is his place from here?
Shandy pointed.
Was I you? I'd pass him by.
How come?
I was taught not to speak bad about folks. But Mr. Gaskin is a sinful man. If he thought there's any reward out on you, he'd turn you in for $2.
Will you turn me in? Huh? Or Buster?
If they was to come right out and ask me, I couldn't lie. It'd be against the book. But if they don't ask me, I don't see why I got to tell them anything.
That good enough for me.
As Cordell rode away, it crossed his mind that once he got hold of that money, he ought to leave Shandy a few dollars for his trouble. Sure, the old man was black, and black folks were used to working for nothing. Cordell had been brought up to believe that that was what they were put on this earth for. But he appreciated the old man's kindness toward Buster. After leaving Shanty's cabin, Cordell continued to wrestle with his conscience. He had been forced to choose between two equally onerous actions. He unsaddled Buster's horse and staked him on a long rope in the timber by the river. He hung the bridle on a branch where he could retrieve it after he recovered his hidden money. He would prefer to stay in the timber where he could not be seen, but much of the land was open, either in pasture or in plowed fields. He had to trust to luck. On occasion, it had been known to let him down, as when Sheriff Blessing caught him handicapped by a hangover. In a while, he saw the cabin. It was as he remembered it, making a last stand against inevitable collapse. He stopped 200 yards away and scrutinized the place for a while. He saw no movement, no smoke coming from the chimney. He didn't see Gaskin working in his field or the neglected little weed patch that passed for a garden. Even this late in the morning, there was a chance he was still asleep. Cordell doubted that Gaskin often watched the sunrise. He checked the backside of the cabin on the slim chance that Gaskin might be at his woodpile, chopping fuel for the fireplace. He wasn't. If he was here at all, he must be inside. Cordell dismounted and tied his horse well clear of the cabin in case it should fall down while he was here. It looked as if all it needed was a strong west wind. He walked around the front, grasped the wooden door handle, and pushed. The door dragged the floor. Pistol in his hand, he quickly stepped inside. Gaskin wasn't there. Cordell saw pieces of firewood lying where they had carelessly been dropped on the floor. He took three long strides toward the wood box and stopped cold. The box was almost empty, and the saddlebags were gone. His first reaction was stunned disbelief. Trembling with a rising anger, he picked up a piece of firewood and hurled it through the glass window.
Oh, you miserable thieving son of a bitch! You stole my money!
It didn't seem fair after all the risk he'd endured to take that money. The days he spent in jail, the wound Buster suffered in freeing him, only to have a low-down sneaking thief steal it all.
God damn it! Son of a bitch!
He tore the cabin apart in a desperate search, thinking Gaskin might have hidden the loot somewhere inside. It was a futile effort. His indignation gradually cooled enough that he could think with some rationality. He asked himself what a miserable reprobate like Gaskin might likely do first if he suddenly came into such a windfall. He would go to town, of course. He'd start spending the same way Cordell intended to once he traveled far enough to feel safe on good Kentucky whiskey and fiddle music and sweet-smelling women. He had seldom felt so frustrated. He had partially destroyed Gaskin's cabin in a search that turned up nothing. He found a shovel and dug in several likely places where the ground looked to have been disturbed. It was a fruitless effort. He considered burning the place out of spite, but the money might still be there, hidden too well for him to find. Its ashes would do him no good. He considered the possibility that Gaskin had taken it with him to town, though that would be risky. The farmer had not struck him as being particularly smart, but maybe the old rascal had sense enough to understand that the law would take the money away from him. That being so, he'd probably left most of it hidden. It must be around here somewhere. Cordell couldn't risk going to town to search for Gaskin. He decided his best choice, though a poor one, was to hide out and wait for Gaskin to return home. If he could get his hands on the old man, he'd turn him inside out until he got his money back. Then he might just break him into little pieces and leave him for the wild hogs he'd seen ranging along the river.
Damn.
He felt a heavy weight of responsibility for Buster.
I shouldn't have left Buster in the hands of that poor old darkie with nothing to offer except good intentions. Damnation. What the hell choice do I have?
It was Cordell's intention, when he recovered his money, to take Buster far from here, perhaps back to the home from which he'd come. They would hide out in some thinly populated area while Buster recuperated. This region, along the lower Colorado River, was among the oldest settled parts of the state. Anywhere a man turned, there were people. Too many people. And they showed little tolerance for those in Cordell's chosen occupation. Off to the southwest stretched a considerable thicket, where Cordell thought he could hide while keeping an eye out for Gaskin's return. He had no provisions. He hadn't wanted to take the little that Shanty had, and he found nothing in Gaskin's cabin beyond some coffee, tobacco, and moonshine whiskey. Gaskin had several chickens, which evidently had to scratch for their living. He managed to catch one and tie its legs together while it squawked and flapped its wings. It would taste good tonight, roasted over a hidden campfire with some moonshine to help it go down. Andy knocked on the doctor's front door, dreading what he might be told. The doctor's wife parted a lace curtain and peered out through the oval glass. She didn't immediately recognize him.
I'm Andy Pickard, ma'am. I've come to ask about Tom.
Her solemn expression did not ease his anxiety. She swung the door inward.
Dr. Smith can tell you better than I can. Come on in.
Thank you, ma'am.
A strong medicine smell assaulted Andy as he entered. The woman motioned toward a chair. Andy sat, but was too nervous to remain seated long. He stood up, turning his hat around and around in his hands as he stared out the window. Shortly, the doctor came into the room, wiping his wet hands on a towel. His white apron was spotted with blood. He smelled of medicinal alcohol. His expression was as solemn as his wife's.
How's Tom?
Hanging on by his fingertips. He's a tough old rooster. He has more scars on his hide than a fighting bull. But I'm afraid he doesn't have much chance.
Andy looked away. His eyes burned as if they had sand in them.
I don't suppose you had any luck chasing the ones who did this to him.
They got clean away.
Maybe not. Judge Tompkins has sent a message to the telegraph office. They can't outrun that.
Mention of the judge gave Andy a new thought.
The judge ought to have the authority to appoint deputies, shouldn't he?
There is one deputy already, Speck Munson. But I had to give him a sedative. His head is swollen, and he took a deep cut across the temple. He won't be of use to anybody for a day or two.
Did Speck tell you what happened?
He couldn't talk much except to say that a big man walked in and surprised him, struck him with a gun barrel. He knew nothing that happened afterward.
It's clear that they released Luther Cordell and shot Tom as he rushed in. But I think I managed to wound one of them. He may be laying dead out there someplace.
A temporary improvement at best. There always seem to be adequate replacements for those of his ilk who fall by the wayside.
Could I see Tom before I go?
You won't be able to ask him any questions.
I'd just like to see him.
The doctor ushered Andy into a back room. Andy found Rusty there, face grim. Rusty seemed to want to say something, but nothing came. Alice sat beside Mrs. Blessing, holding her hand. The two had been close since Alice nursed the older woman through a long illness. Anger gripped Andy as he looked down upon the sheriff, lying with all but his pale face covered by a sheet.
We gotta do something about this.
Rusty nodded, but said nothing. The doctor gave Andy an intense study.
Perhaps you're the one to do it.
Maybe I am. I'll talk to the judge.
Tell him you have my backing for anything you intend to do. Tom Blessing has been a friend of mine for a long time.
I know how you feel, Doctor. He's been a friend to everybody.
Gray-haired Judge Tompkins sat with his heavy horsehide chair turned at an angle from his roll-top desk. He stared solemnly out the window, his mind carrying him somewhere far away. The sound of Andy's boots thumping on the pine floor startled him.
Oh, I didn't know you'd come in, Pickard. I was just thinking about Tom.
Me too. That's what I came to talk to you about.
I understand your posse returned with nothing to show for their trouble.
Spirits must have been looking the other way, but we're not through. Tom said yesterday that he wanted to make me a deputy. I turned him down. I wish now I'd taken him up.
The judge's eyes narrowed.
We can fix that. I could deputize you.
The judge took a cigar from a box on his desk and offered it to Andy.
Thanks, sir. No.
Tompkins bit the end from it and stared absently at it for a minute.
But you know that being a deputy in this county would give you no jurisdiction if you pursued a man beyond the county line.
Judge, a pistol carries authority of its own.
But should you arrest a man outside of your jurisdiction, it could cause the case to be thrown out of court.
Even if the man is guilty.
That is one unfortunate effect of Texas law. It is often honored more in the breach than in the enforcement, but given an accomplished defense attorney...
Tompkins left the rest for Andy to ponder. Andy's mouth twisted as he considered the unfairness of an acquittal just because he caught a man on the wrong side of a line nobody could see.
You may now have considered another possibility. You have been a ranger... You know that rangers are not encumbered by county lines.
He gave Andy a moment to think about it.
I believe I have enough influence in Austin to get your ranger commission reinstated.
Andy's spine tingled.
You do that?
With the greatest of pleasure. I'll compose a wire right now with your consent, of course.
You've got it, Judge. I didn't think I'd ever care to be a ranger again, but for Tom's sake, I'm ready and raring to go.
It occurred to Andy that Bethel might not approve. She'd been pleased when he took his leave of the Rangers. He hoped she would understand. But if she didn't, well, she had endured many disappointments in the past. One more shouldn't prove too heavy a burden.
Consider yourself a temporary deputy sheriff till we hear from the Rangers. That way you'll have official sanction for whatever you do, at least within county lines.
That'll be helpful.
You won't have to carry the full weight alone. I've sent for another man. I'm going to appoint him interim sheriff pending an election.
Who?
Farley Brackett. He has had years of experience as a ranger, and he has already filed for election as sheriff.
Andy felt as if the air had gone out of his lungs. He considered backing out of his agreement. The last thing he wanted was close association with Farley, especially in a subordinate position.
Have you got the authority to appoint a sheriff?
I have to have approval by the commissioner's court, but that is just a formality. They'll do what I tell them. I have something on every one of them.
Andy had heard the same thing from Tom. The county clerk walked past the door, his bow tie hanging loose and his shirt tail partly out. He saw the judge and turned back and entered the room.
Drinking a little early, aren't you, bud?
Oh, just one. There wasn't any business in my office anyway, and I'm glad I went because I saw something I wouldn't expect to see again in 100 years.
and you're busting a gut to tell us about it.
It's old Fowler Gaskin. I don't know where he got it, but he's waving a handful of money around and drinking it up as fast as he can raise a glass.
You sure it was Fowler?
Nobody else looks like Fowler Gaskin.
Fowler never had $10 at one time in his life. Wherever he got it, it's a cinch he didn't break a sweat earning it.
It took but a moment for Andy to put the pieces together.
Tom arrested Luther Cordell out at Fowler's place. Cordell didn't have but a few dollars on him, and yet he had just robbed a bank. I'm betting he hid his loot somewhere at Fowler's place, and Fowler found it.
The judge saw the logic.
We better go talk to him.
The damned old fool will get his head blown off. Cordell will be looking for that money. If he doesn't find it, he'll be looking for Fowler.
Perhaps we should let him. Fowler Gaskin's funeral would be regarded as community betterment.
Much as I'd like to be one of Fowler's pallbearers, we can't just stand back and allow it to happen.
No, but one can wish.
They walked together to the saloon. It was regarded as a social center for men of the town and countryside. A respectable place where many a bale of cotton had been sold, many a mule traded. A place where even a preacher could feel at ease, sort of. Sermons had been delivered here by itinerant ministers who had no church. The proprietor seemed pleased to see the judge walk through the door. A tall, angular man dressed in black, he looked more like an undertaker than a bartender. He was a deacon, known for delivering short but pointed sermons to patrons he thought had stayed too long. He jerked a thumb toward the old man slumped at a table in the corner.
Judge, can you put Gaskin under arrest or something? I won't sell him any more whiskey, but he won't leave. Says he'll sit there till he's sober, and then I'll have no excuse for not bringing him a fresh bottle. I hate to just take him by the seat of the britches and throw him out. He's so spindly, he's liable to break.
The judge gave Gaskin a moment's frowning study.
Fowler Gaskin, as county judge, I am ordering that you be placed under arrest on a charge of being drunk and disorderly. Andy, please take him in hand.
Gaskin was too light in weight to put up an effective struggle against a husky young man in his 20s, especially when he was drunk.
For a long time now, I've wanted to do that.
Gaskin tried to focus his gaze, but it wavered between Andy and the judge.
Arrest me! I ain't broke no laws. I pay good cash money for my drinks.
Gaskin pulled a handful of bills from his pocket to demonstrate.
You got no call to arrest a man that's got money.
Where'd you get it?
From the Lord Hisself. Who else would have put it right there in my cabin? He takes pity on the poor and downtrodden. Hey, ain't but few men been tried down all more than me.
The Lord didn't have anything to do with that money. It was taken in a Galveston bank robbery.
I found it in my cabin, right where the good Lord put it. He does work in mysterious ways.
Do you think he intended for you to spend it on whiskey?
He didn't leave no instructions. He must like a little drink himself. Or why would he put whiskey on this earth?
Andy wrested the money from Gaskin's hands and counted.
Hey! Are you no cow piece of Indian trash? Who you think you are taking my money, you engine bastard?
The tally was far short of the amount supposed to have been taken in the robbery. Surely Gaskin hadn't been in town long enough to drink up so much.
Where's the rest of it, Fowler?
I hid it where they can't nobody find it but me. Ain't no use you go looking.
Maybe you're too drunk to see the mess you're in. You remember the fellow you were drinking with? The one Tom Blessing arrested at your place?
Nice feller he was. Shared his whiskey like a true Christian.
Some Christian. He's back on the loose and no doubt looking for his money. He'd skin you alive to make you tell where it is and then hang you on a meat hook in your own smokehouse.
Gaskin's clouded mind seemed unable to grasp the full reality.
He can't afford to kill me as long as I'm the only one who knows where that money's at.
Nobody could break you up piece by piece. An arm first, and then a leg, and then the other arm. You could start whittling on your ears, maybe your privates. How long do you think you could keep a secret?
He wouldn't come back. Not after busting out of jail. He's long gone.
The old man rubbed his red-rimmed eyes.
You just wanted to steal my money for yourself. That's what it is. You're a damn thief.
Damn it, Gaskin. Cordell will turn this country upside down. Safest place for you right now is in jail.
Gaskin staggered a couple of steps backward.
I'm an innocent man! I ain't stole nothing from nobody!
Jail is the one place where Cordell can't come looking. Tell me where you hid the money, and I'll put it in there, too, for safekeeping.
No, sir, I ain't telling nobody. That money's mine.
You're a damn fool, Fowler, but you always were.
Andy was only vaguely familiar with Tom's office, but he remembered seeing the sheriff put the keys in the desk's bottom drawer. He placed Gaskin in an inside cell that had no window through which anyone could see him from outside. He considered it unlikely that Cordell posed any real threat to Gaskin so long as he was locked in. If Cordell wanted to break into the jail, that would be fine with Andy. It would save having to go out and hunt for him. Only one other prisoner sat in jail. He got too rowdy on moonshine and raised a ruckus in the street. Tom would probably have turned him loose by now were he able. Andy decided to release him so that he would have one less problem. The bleary-eyed farmhand shuffled to the office, dragging his feet. Andy gave him back his personal belongings, but the prisoner kept waiting expectantly.
Sheriff Tom always gave me a dollar or two to help me on my way.
He had claimed he slept through the jailbreak and the shooting, an obvious lie. He simply didn't want to become involved in any repercussions.
I'll help you on your way, all right, with a swift kick. Don't let me catch you drunk in this town again.
Well, I just thought I'd ask.
The man left, but not in good grace. Andy didn't want to leave the jail untended so long as Gaskin was in it. He didn't even risk crossing the street to order supper at the restaurant. Biscuits Vanderpool took it upon himself to walk over and take his order.
Evening, Andy. Can I bring you anything from across the street?
Thanks. I'll take beef steak, gravy, biscuits, and coffee. As for Fowler Gaskin, anything you can scrape up will be better than what he's used to.
By God, Pickard! I'm a taxpayer, and I deserve a good supper!
I doubt that Gaskin ever coughed up enough taxes to pay for a pot of beans. All right, bring him whatever you bring me, but we're not going to fatten him up at county expense.
Rusty had come to the jail after Vanderpool returned with Andy's supper. They'd visited about the weather and crop prospects, but avoided discussing what lay heaviest on their minds. They quickly ran out of talk, and Rusty had left to look in again on Tom. Andy now lay on the same hard bunk that Tom had pointed him to. The front door was locked and reinforced by a heavy bar. Only dynamite would break it down. Andy didn't sleep much, partly because of Gaskin's snoring, and partly because his mind wouldn't shut down. He kept seeing Tom in his uneasy dreams. Andy had just finished eating the breakfast the restaurant operator had brought over when Spec Munson walked in. His head was bandaged, and he looked to be in pain.
I'm reporting for work, if I'm still hired.
I guess you're hired until somebody tells you otherwise. If you're worried about it, you could ask the judge.
As long as he doesn't tell me otherwise, I won't bring it up. I suppose everybody blames me for what happened.
They probably did, but Andy thought the young man looked miserable enough already. Perhaps the experience had taught him something.
I suppose it happened so fast that you didn't have time to do anything.
Munson nodded.
I barely seen the man that hit me. He was a bad-looking one, and big as a barn.
How do you know if you barely saw him?
It don't take long to see mean, and he was mean to the bone.
Did you hear Cordell call him by name?
I thought he said, Milk, but that ain't no name.
Munson collapsed into a chair. Andy knew that in his condition, he couldn't be trusted with responsibility.
Maybe you'd better go home and get some more rest.
Better if I stay here and lend a hand. Maybe the judge won't fire me if it sees me at work.
Before long, Speck was asleep in the chair. He was probably still feeling the effects of the sedative the doctor administered. Andy hoped Judge Tompkins wouldn't walk in and see Speck in this condition. But that hope fell by the wayside. Speck was the first thing Tompkins saw as he walked through the door.
Doesn't that boy do anything but sleep?
It's the doctor's pills, I think.
He never was right for this job. I had Tom hire him because the boy needed a regular paycheck. But it wouldn't be right to fire him so soon after he's been injured in the line of duty. I'll wait until he's well.
He'll still need a paycheck.
A plow's more fitting for him than a badge. I'll give him a job on my farm. Have you seen Farley Brackett yet?
The name made Andy frown.
He hasn't been in.
He's due. And I got a wire back from Austin. They're taking your ranger application under advisement, so you'll have to remain a deputy for a while.
It was a disappointment, but Andy shrugged it off.
A ranger was on his way here to pick up Cordell and take him back to Galveston. Maybe he can stay and help you. If you have to cross over the county line, you can let him make the official arrest.
Did they say who they sent?
No name. Till we hear about your reinstatement, you should keep the deputy's badge.
I never had one.
The judge rummaged in a desk drawer and came up with the same San Antonio City badge that Tom had offered. He gave it a quick glance.
It's the man behind it that counts. Nobody's gonna read the inscription anyway, especially if you're holding a gun on him.
The judge turned toward the door.
I'm going over to see about Tom. Want to go with me?
I sure do.
Andy got up and stepped over to Spec.
Spec. Keep the door locked.
Okay, Andy. Morning, Judge.
At the doctor's house, Mrs. Smith met Andy and Tompkins at the door. Her grim expression told them what neither wanted to ask. He and the judge exchanged worried glances. The doctor came out to meet them, shaking his gray head.
I'm sorry. Tom just passed.
As they approached the back room, Andy heard Mrs. Blessing sobbing. They discovered her sitting in a chair against Tom's bed, one arm lying across her husband's still form. Alice Shannon stood over her, trying to comfort her but unable to speak. Rusty stood on the other side of the bed, looking as if he had just been kicked in the stomach.
Andy, Tom's gone.
Andy could not reply. He turned away and crushed his hat in his hands. Farley Brackett was waiting outside the jail when Andy and the judge returned, both badly shaken. Obeying orders, Munson had refused to let him in.
If I was the sheriff, first thing I'd do would be to fire that dumb kid.
He just did what I told him to. Tom Blessing just passed.
Farley's peevish expression shifted quickly to one of exaggerated sadness.
Oh, that sure is too bad. We'll miss old Tom.
Andy suspected Farley was not grieving all that much. Tom's passing gave him a better chance to take over this office permanently in the special election that was certain to come. Speck was up and giving the jail a listless sweeping that left no visible effect. He went off by himself and cried when told about Tom.
Farley, do you solemnly swear to uphold the laws of this county and the state of Texas?
I do.
Then by the virtue of the power vested in me as the judge of this county, I pronounce you interim sheriff.
Judge, I promise you I'll get the skunk that shot Tom. We all owe big debt to that good man for all the years he served the citizens of this county.
Andy didn't comment. He knew that anything he said would be bitter. Tom was not yet an hour dead, and Farley was already settling into his job. Farley had noticed Andy's badge.
I gather that I'm in charge now. Andy's got to take orders from me, right?
The judge was momentarily surprised by the antagonistic looks that passed between Andy and Farley. He had known nothing of their conflict. He considered for a moment.
Yes, but I would expect that authority to be used judiciously. Oh, and Pickett's deputy status is only temporary. I've asked that he be reinstated as a ranger. When that happens, I would consider his authority to be paramount.
Farley's face fell. Speck listened in puzzlement. He understood nothing of this.
What do you failures think we ought to do now?
Andy answered quickly before Farley had a chance to consider.
I think the sheriff should stay and watch the jail in case Cordell tries to get at Fowler Gaskin and make him tell where he hid the money. Farley'll need help. So you'd better stay with him, Spec. Cordell has probably already been to Fowler's place hunting for his money. But I'll go out there in case he's still hanging around waiting for Fowler.
That sounds like a solid plan.
The judge's voiced approval left Farley no room for argument.
Well, I don't even know what Cordell looks like.
Spec can tell you. He saw a lot of him while he was in this jail.
I'd like to see him back here again. I'd keep him in leg irons and make him empty his own slop jar.
Andy saw that Cordell had already made a thorough search of Gaskin's cabin. The place looked even more chaotic than he had seen it before. Pots, pans, and plates were scattered across the floor, the shelves emptied. The cot and the wood box were turned upside down. Several stones had been chiseled out of the fireplace. The wooden floor had been pried up in several places. He recognized the possibility that Cordell had found the money and fled with it. In that case, he was probably already out of the county. But Andy thought it was equally possible Cordell hadn't found it. Though lazy and shiftless, Gaskin was crafty as a coyote. He was unlikely to have hidden his treasure where it could be easily found. More probably, he had secreted it so well that a searcher would have to make a pact with the devil to find it. Cordell seemed the man to make such a pact. After a perfunctory search around the outside of the cabin, Andy reasoned that Cordell had done it before him. Any further searching would be a waste of time. He decided to return to town. At the jail, Farley looked him over with critical eyes.
Well, you don't look to be packing any money, so I don't reckon you found it. And Cordell's giving you the slip. Ain't no telling where he's got to by now.
Arguing with Farley would only get Andy's blood stirred up. Instead, he agreed.
He tore Fowler's cabin half to pieces. I don't know if he found the money or not.
You didn't trail him?
You know I'm not much good at tracking.
That's the gospel truth. All those years with the Comanches, you didn't learn a damn thing.
Andy turned to Speck.
Is Fowler giving you any trouble?
He cussed me up one side and down the other is all. Keeps saying he didn't steal anything and he don't belong here.
Bad as I hate to say so, he's probably right. All we've got on Fowler is that he was drunk and disorderly. We can't even prove it was bank money he was spending. The judge will probably tell us to turn him loose in the morning.
That's too bad. It's warmed my heart seeing that old sneak sitting behind bars.
Andy was tempted to comment about Farley's warm heart, but passed up the opportunity.
You can sit up tonight and watch him if you want to. Me and Speck can use the sleep.
Gaskin's knotted hands clasped the bars so tightly that the knuckles were white.
You been out to my place?
Just came back.
Find anything?
Andy decided the old sneak needed something to worry about.
Somebody tore your cabin to pieces and dug holes everywhere.
You ain't lying? He dug all around?
You could plant a garden.
For a moment, Andy thought Gaskin was going to cry. The old man sank back onto his bunk and buried his face in his hands.
That money's rightfully mine.
Finders don't always get to be keepers. At least you were rich for a little while.
I found it!
Andy turned away from the cell, leaving Gaskin to ponder the fickle nature of fate.
Or maybe he gave up and left.
Maybe.
As soon as we turn him loose, he'll hightail it home to see if the money's still where he hid it.
I doubt that it is. Cordell has likely got it and gone.
He didn't entirely believe that, but he didn't want Farley to second-guess a half-baked idea he'd been toying with.
You enjoy torturing the old man. Must be the Indian in you, Badger boy.
What's this about Indians? There ain't no Indians around here anymore, are there?
Get Andy to tell you the story of his life. But not where I've got to listen to it.
In the morning, Andy encountered Judge Tompkins as he made his way past the jail.
Morning, Judge.
Morning, Pickett. Still putting up with that fool Gaskin?
Not for long. I don't think we have a legal reason to hold him.
Well, I'm afraid I have to agree. My preference would be to let him sit there and rot. But we can't keep feeding him at the county's expense. If he would just commit a murder or something else worthwhile, we could turn him over to the state.
I don't think he's got that much ambition.
Probably not. All right, turn him loose.
Yes, sir.
Good day.
To you too, sir.
Gaskin ate but little supper the night before, and had only dabbled at his breakfast this morning. He trembled with anxiety.
Ain't y'all ever gonna let me out of here?
I've talked to the judge, and he said you're gonna be let go this morning.
I'm figuring on suing the county for false arrest. Time my lawyer gets through ringing y'all out, I'm liable to own the courthouse.
Andy knew Gaskin had no lawyer. He had dodged lawyers and courthouses all his life. They meant nothing to him but aggravation.
Better eat your breakfast, Fowler. You're going back to surviving on your own cooking. It's a wonder you didn't poison yourself years ago. Gather up your stuff, Fowler. You'll find your mule at the wagon yard.
I ain't paying no feed bill. I didn't tell y'all to put him up over there.
Just go, Fowler.
Andy accompanied Gaskin to the door and watched as he hurried across the square on wobbly legs. Farley moved up beside Andy.
Once I'm full sheriff, there'll be some changes made. I'd let that old scoundrel stay in jail till he put roots down through the floor.
That wouldn't be according to law.
Some law you gotta make up as you go along.
Farley went back into the office and began rummaging in the drawers of Tom's desk. He found a sheaf of wanted notices and began to study them. He smiled to himself. Andy guessed he was imagining himself catching all those criminals single-handed. Andy remained in the doorway until he saw Gaskin riding up the street, quirting his raw-boned mule. The mule flinched at the sting, but didn't pick up the pace. Gaskin disappeared on the wagon trail that led off in the general direction of his farm. Andy looked back to make sure Farley wasn't watching him, and then stepped quietly out of the office in the direction of the livery stable. Andy was sure he knew where Gaskin was going. He had followed him at a distance since he left town. He didn't want Farley coming along, for one man stood a better chance of staying out of Gaskin's sight. Andy didn't close the distance until he neared Gaskin's shack. He stopped in a stand of trees where he could watch without being seen. Gaskin was still applying the quirt with little effect. The old mule had no speed left. Gaskin was so eager that he jumped off 100 feet short of his cabin and ran the rest of the way in the wobbly gait dictated by his stiff joints. Fowler attacked the woodpile in back, hurling firewood aside. He picked up a shovel that was lying nearby and drove its point into the ground where the wood had been. He was so engrossed in his frantic digging that he didn't see Andy ride up behind him. Andy watched Gaskin drop to his knees. He pulled a set of saddlebags out of the hole and opened them anxiously. Andy dismounted and walked up unnoticed.
I'll take those, Fowler.
Gaskin turned so quickly that he almost fell. He clutched the saddlebags to his thin chest. His eyes were desperate.
These are mine. I found them, and they're mine.
You know that money was taken from a bank. It's got to go back.
Like hell!
Gaskin turned to run. Andy grappled with him, trying to wrest the bags from his hands. He jerked them loose, was off balance, and stumbled. Gaskin picked up a large chunk of wood and struck Andy across the head.
Bastard!
Andy's hat sailed away. His knees buckled as Gaskin yanked the bags from his hands.
Don't be in such a hurry, old man. That my property you got your grubby hands on.
On his knees, Andy looked up through a painful haze. The black-bearded Cordell seemed to sway back and forth. The pistol in his hand looked like a cannon. Gaskin froze, clutching the bags as if they were a baby.
I'd let you all fight it out, but I'm afraid one or both of you get killed and they blame it on me, because they always do.
He moved toward Gaskin and extended his free hand.
Now gimme.
Gaskin backed away, frantically holding on to the bags. Cordell touched the muzzle of his pistol to the old man's Adam's apple.
I said gimme!
Gaskin yielded them up and went to his knees.
No, they're mine. You got no right.
You go rob your own bank. Any fool can do it. You just show him a gun to let him know you're serious to empty out the vault.
Cordell turned to Andy, relieving him of the pistol on his hip. Andy had been too stunned to draw it.
I remember you from the jailhouse, but I don't remember you wearing a badge then.
Andy's head throbbed.
God damn you. You killed one of the best men that ever lived.
That wasn't me. The man that done it just took off to Mexico or someplace. Mexico looked pretty good to me, too, now.
Cordell balanced the saddlebags over his free arm.
Let me have that cartridge belt. And just so you don't get a notion to follow too quick, I'm taking your horse and that mule yonder. You all stay put and don't get in another fight now. I won't be here to bust it up.
Cordell mounted a horse he had tied at the side of the cabin. Rode up beside Andy's, taking the reins.
I don't want to be accused of no horse thieving, you hear me? I ain't that low. I'll leave your horse and mule down the trail a ways.
He rode southward. The lagging mule limited his speed, pulling back on the reins and stubbornly refusing to move beyond a trot.
If I was him, I'd shoot that mule.
If I had my shotgun, I'd shoot you.
Andy ran his hand across the place where Gaskin had struck him. It burned. He felt the stickiness of blood. His head ached as if a hatchet were sunk in it up to the handle.
Fowler, you like to have brained me.
I intended to. First time in my life I ever had any real money, and you caused that thief to get away with it.
He was laying for you to come back. He'd have taken it whether I was here or not.
Fool. Damn bastard.
Gaskin went into his cabin.
Damn that son of a bitch all to hell!
He staggered back outside, trembling.
They wrecked my house! Tore everything up!
Andy tried to muster a little sympathy for Gaskin, but it wasn't there. Beside that, his head hurt too much.
The place was a wreck long before Cordell came along. You ought to set fire to it and start over.
You always hated me. You and Rusty Shannon, all the rest of them. You got no Christian feelings for a poor man.
Gaskin didn't have to be a poor man. He owned the makings of a good little farm. All it needed was a competent farmer, someone who would work at it and keep leaving fresh footprints from one end to the other. Gaskin raised just enough corn to put bread on his table and make moonshine whiskey in a still down by the creek. Andy found it hard to imagine Gaskin putting out the energy to move part of his woodpile, dig a hole to hide the saddlebags, then cover them up with firewood. Only money or whiskey could provide that much motivation. For a moment, Andy pictured what he could do with this place if it were his. The thought was fleeting. The last thing he wanted was to spend the rest of his life in this older and heavily settled part of Texas, tied to a plow, though it seemed to be what Bethel wished him to do. His thoughts drifted for a moment to the western hills and the rolling plains. Two riders approached from the direction of town. As his vision gradually improved, Andy discerned they were Farley and Speck. He dreaded hearing what Farley would say, so he took the initiative.
I didn't ask y'all to follow me.
No, but you should have let me in on what you were up to. I could have told you you couldn't handle the situation by yourself. Now Cordell's got the money and gone. You go back to town dragging an empty sack and looking like a fool.
Farley made no effort to hide his satisfaction.
But maybe with a little luck, I'll be able to pick up the pieces.
Farley didn't mention Speck. Andy guessed he hoped to catch Cordell and grab some glory for himself.
That's all right. I'm not running for sheriff.
Farley examined the hole where Gaskin had retrieved the saddlebags.
So, this is where the money was at?
Andy's eyes were still blurry, but perhaps Farley and Speck could follow the fleeing outlaw. He pointed in the direction Cordell took.
He hasn't been gone long. Took my horse so I couldn't follow after him.
You never was much of a farmer, and you ain't much of a deputy either, I swear. I don't know what you're good for, badger boy. Come on, Speck. Let's go catch the man that Andy let get away.
They moved off in a lope. Andy was angrier at himself than at Farley. He shouldn't have let Cordell sneak up and get the upper hand on him. It wouldn't have happened if he hadn't been wrestling with Gaskin. The old fossil wasn't worth all this grief.
He caused me to lose my money. And on account of you, I lost my mule, too.
That mule probably didn't like it here anyway. I sure wouldn't.
Large chunks had been chewed from wooden fence planks near the barn, a sign the mule had been starved for nutrients. It had to subsist on whatever native grass it could find and dry roughage that was more straw than hay.
I ought to arrest you for cruelty to an animal.
You're hell-bent on arresting people. Maybe if you hadn't put me in jail, I wouldn't have lost my money.
If you hadn't been in jail, Cordell would have caught you by yourself and nailed your hide to the cabin door.
Andy went to Gaskin's well and turned the windlass to bring up a bucket of water. He drank his fill, then poured the rest over his throbbing head.
You got good water here, feller. You'd be better off if you drank more of this and less of that moonshine.
I'll have all the whiskey I want when I get through suing you in the county. You'll be working for me for the rest of your life.
You're making my head hurt, Fowler. Shut the hell up.
Andy considered setting out afoot for town, but he feared he didn't have enough strength to get there. Besides, Farley and Speck would likely return for him sooner or later, with or without Cordell. Andy walked over and sat down to rest on a bench at the front of the cabin. Gaskin went inside and began rattling things around in an attempt to straighten up his damaged dwelling. Andy felt that he deserved no help, so he offered none.
Damn, Judge locked me up just to make sure I'd lose my money. Nobody ever gives a poor man a break. Take my sons away from me, get them killed in the war. What do I got left? Then the Lord sends me some money for all my troubles, and they're all jealous.
Won't let a poor man enjoy a life. Damn Cordell! Damn Pickard! Damn every last one of them! I ain't been treated right since the day I was born!
It was near dark when Farley and Speck returned, leading Andy's horse and the mule. Andy's pistol and cartridge belt hung from the saddle horn where Cordell had left them.
You're luckier than you deserve to be, Badger boy. He left these where we would find them. He's an honest man for a thief.
Cordell had probably been glad to get rid of the lagging mule, Andy thought. Farley and Speck had obviously not caught up with the outlaw.
Why didn't you trail him?
Andy knew Farley was no better a tracker than he.
It was like he just left the ground and flew away. Them tracks stopped dead at the edge of the creek. We couldn't find where they came out.
Farley shook his head.
Damn poor ranger you are, messing around and letting them escape.
Andy mounted his bay horse and started toward town.
Well, when you start campaigning, you can tell everybody it was all my fault. Things would have been different if you'd been full sheriff.